being polite may not seem like a radical act. Being polite is something we've been taught as children and we work on for the most part for the remainder of our lives. And being polite may not be the first thing that comes to mind when we think about politics and the formation of the United States.
But our next guest says that being polite and acting civil marked a change from previous rulers and governments and was crucial to American democracy. In fact, he says the founders' move to be polite and civil was a radical act.
Stephen C. Bullock is a history professor for the Worcester Polytechnic Institute. He's the author of Tea Sets and Tyranny, The Politics of Politeness in Early America. Steve, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I don't always think of, you know, the American Revolution as an example of politeness exactly, but you say that was actually a crucial distinction between the people rebelling and the government they were rebelling against. Can you spell it out for
us? Well, I think they were certainly thinking about it. It's not the case that everyone was always polite and all the leaders were as polite as they ought to be. As we know from reality, it doesn't work that way. But that's certainly the vision they had in their minds. They are thinking about politeness, as you said, not just a personal virtue, not just something which you do in your everyday life and your personal experience, but also as a public virtue. So virtue, the virtue of politeness involved, you know, being generous, being kind, being concerned about other people. And they thought that was a key toward creating a more democratic, a more responsive government.
And that's in contrast, of course, to most of the governments of, say, Europe, which were monarchies, often tyrannical, as seen especially from our shores here. Can you talk about the sort of behavior, the unrestrained, unpolite behavior that they were rebelling against?
Well, there's certainly all sorts of examples of that, and it's really, you know, England is in some ways a source of this. So it's not necessarily that English people are less polite or less are thinking about that less, but Americans certainly felt that, and they felt that, you know, the experience of government, you know, essentially to the beginning of time had been one of leaders trying to overawe people, trying to control people, trying to push them into things, and so they began to suggest that politeness was a way of responding to that and of making a better kind of world. So the example that I use in an article I published in Aon that I think is on your website, of someone who was of that older kind of vision of things, is Governor Francis Nicholson, who's governor of Virginia. So in some ways, one of the centers of the revolution later on, one of the centers of this vision of politeness in the early part of the 18th century, this is a man who was sort of unrestrained in his bouts of anger and of rage, and he would go on and shout at people for hours upon hours. So, and I think he saw that as part of a way of thinking about how you should rule. He thought that it was the job of the leader to tell people what to do, and if they weren't listening, then he needed to shout louder and make sure they heard them, make sure that they heard him, and make sure they did it.
And a word you just used there I think was really important, unrestrained. The idea that if I am a person in power, whether I'm a monarch or the representative thereof as a governor in this case, my power means there are no restraints on my behavior. Is that a key part of the story?
Right. I think that's a very good point. The lack of the idea of restraint, of being responsive to other people, of being responsible, all of these things are part of what a polite leader would be. And the term which they used, and it's used in the all sorts of things from the American Revolution, the term that they liked to speak about was arbitrary government. That was something that they disliked intensely. And arbitrary government sort of means that the leader feels he has no, or she has no restrictions on them, that legal issues, customs, public opinion, all of those are unimportant, that it's really the will of the leader which is the central idea. And politeness said, no, you need to have respect, you need to be moderate, you need to allow other people to have a say in things.
Talking to Steve Bullock, history professor, author of the book Tea Sets and Tyranny, The Politics of Politeness in Early America. And Steve, I want to hash out the word polite a little bit, because I think at that time, and even a little bit now, you might think of polite society. So I lift my pinky when I drink my tea and eat my crumpets and that kind of thing. We're talking about a different meaning of politeness. How did the founding fathers and mothers of American democracy think of this idea of politeness?
That's right. I think today it has the vision of being overly concerned with rules and those sort of things. So polite to us sometimes sort of means, you know, make sure you say thank you as you say goodbye to people and at the party and those kind of things. And those are important. But politeness originally meant something like smooth, polished. So up until right around 1700 or so, that term in English simply meant something that was smooth. So if you talked about a rock, it could be a polished rock.
Ah, okay.
And then it becomes something that they apply to people. So in a sense, a polite person is someone who's polished, not necessarily that they shine and they're so extraordinary and things, but they're polished so that they don't have rough edges, they don't have sharp sort of things sticking out when they're dealing with other people. They're able to interact positively and pleasantly with other people.
And as a counterpoint to the governor you were talking about, Nicholson, earlier, you talk about Thomas Jefferson as a key person in developing this idea of politeness as in part a political attitude in response to arbitrary government. Can you talk about Jefferson?
Well, he has this vision. I mean, his ideal is that being polite is a necessary part of things. He even says during the American Revolution, he says, you know, when we capture soldiers there, we need to treat them politely, which is kind of a extraordinary kind of thing, especially when we know that in reality, that by the end of the Revolution, captured people are often treated extremely harshly. And Jefferson uses the term politeness. He uses that term of being concerned for things, and so that's a big part of his experience. He is particularly impressed by Benjamin Franklin as an example of this. He says Franklin was the most polite sort of person in society, that is, in public gatherings he ever saw. So it's kind of an extraordinary thing, and he spent a lot of time with Franklin because they were in France together. In some ways, the center of personal politeness, at least, the place where people had thought about that and had shaped their personal actions more like that. Franklin was a sort of great example of that sort of thing. And we know from Franklin's autobiography that this is something he worked on early in his life. I think in some ways, his early part of his life, he was a little bit of a almost like a know-it-all, somebody who really wanted to argue with people. And he sort of, in his autobiography, writes about changing that and realizing that you can't contradict people all the time. You can't speak and hope that you're going to have a victory over people. You have to show concern for other people and be concerned about pleasing them.
So if you're in the mid-1700s on this band of colonies on the Atlantic, you're ruled by this often arbitrary government from across the sea, represented by governors who might scream at you for 6 hours if you looked at it the wrong way. Does this idea of civic politeness become, it seems weird now to think of it, does it become a radical thing to do?
Well, in some ways, I mean, it is a radical thing. It's true in England as well, because they're fighting against, you know, people who are harsh and want to control things. But Americans sort of, when you get to the Revolution, they see themselves as following through, as pushing forward that deep sort of vision of things. They didn't like people telling them what to do. They didn't like this arbitrary, this absolute government, which seemed not to be concerned about how people are treated. And that's a theme today, right? In rap music, you know, the term, you know, I was dissed. You don't want to be dissed, and that comes from disrespected. And so I think it's very much part of the same kind of concerns. The 18th century, they didn't want to be dissed. They didn't want to be disrespected. They wanted to be treated generously. And at least in their better moments, you know, the founders thought of themselves as acting properly in that same kind of way, showing respect for other people, showing concern about how people felt about them, and then if necessary, of course, trying to treat them better and trying to change their minds about things.
We're talking to Stephen Bullock right now about why American democracy can be at its best. It was kind of a founding idea, really, when people, especially in government, are polite. He's a professor of history at Worcester Polytechnic Institute.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What role do you think politeness plays in our political process? Do you think that politeness is missing from our political discourse? If so, what steps do you think we can take to help us become more civil and polite? Give us your thoughts by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or leave your comment on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation about the role politeness played in the shaping of our American democracy. We're talking to Stephen Bullock, history professor at Worcester Polytechnic Institute, and he wrote a piece examining this history for Eon. You can find his piece linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest about this idea of politeness being an important part of the founding of America, and what do you think, if any, are lessons for today? Do you have hopes that we can maybe get past some of the discord and agree to disagree politely in American politics? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Steve, politeness, I think people can think of as kind of a passive virtue and maybe a bad thing to have in some cases. You're not going to stand up in the face of injustice. Obviously, what you're talking about with politeness among the founding fathers is not that, because ultimately they had a revolution against arbitrary government.
Yeah, well, they weren't afraid of disagreeing if necessary, of course. But and when pushed, they were willing to, you know, to respond, you know, with full force there. But they also recognize that within the community, within sort of everyday life, that there was a need for people showing respect for other people, that even though there was a disagreement, that the best way to handle that was not to turn your back on somebody, not to treat them harshly, but to show some respect and to be responsive to them. Now again, they didn't necessarily do it. They had, as we know, the history of early America after the Revolution is a period of often harsh kind of political divisions.
I mean, these guys were real jerks to each other very often. I mean, a lot of the people we have on our pantheon of founding fathers, right?
They could be very harsh, and I think, and it's one of the lessons which I learned from reading this, is that both in the early 1700s and in the later 1700s, you know, that when they're talking about politeness, they're not simply sort of thinking in sort of pie in the sky, sort of never never land sort of things. They're thinking about this because they know how bad people can act.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. We have Matt calling us from Chicago. Matt, hi.
Hello, I love the topic and the things I'm hearing. I think it's wonderful. I've always thought that someone who can present a point, even a counterpoint, even a sharp one, in a polite manner, elevates the power and the stature of how they present it. So I think it's fantastic. I wonder if, I missed it, the professor, the author, thinks that it also should or could translate to the press. Obviously, there's a lot of press back in the times, you know, when the Ben Franklin and all those folks were around, and there was some plenty of sharp words in the press, a little easier to be, you know, on the printing press and be provocative. What do you think about the press adopting politeness, maybe even in the daily briefing room?
Matt, thanks for the call. Steve, some really interesting points to bring up there. First, can you talk about how the press back then, in the days you're talking about, fit into this concept of politeness?
That's a hard one. Let me first note Matt's very good point about, you know, that in some ways the politeness was not designed to make everybody think the same. It was designed in some ways so that you get better outcomes because people have more concern for each other and are more willing to share what they think and to interact with each other. So I think that's an important point. The press in America is, you know, has had a tough it's a tough question. People write virtually from the very beginning, from Benjamin Franklin's brother, when he was an apprentice. Remember, Franklin was apprenticed to his brother. His brother runs a newspaper, which is often extremely harsh toward the leaders of Boston, and so there is that history, and it's gone on. And I think Franklin, when he gets his own newspaper, has decided that he needs to be careful about that. That he needs to protect his press and to protect the public discourse in some ways by being less, by attempting to sort of not push real hard on being harsh to people. Now, he has his moments later on, the 50s or 60s or so, when he's really angry with the Penns, the Penn family. He can be pretty harsh there. And of course, when the revolution comes, he is, you know, fully in the American camp. But, you know, he is thinking about that. But there's also, you know, the experience is such that politeness is not often there in a lot of the press.
Thanks a lot for that call, Matt. We're talking to Steve Bullock, history professor for the Worcester Polytechnic Institute, author of the book Tea Sets and Tyranny, The Politics of Politeness in Early America. We have a piece he wrote linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Back to your calls. Mark is on the line in Altoona. Mark, hi.
Yeah, they're saying the plural of anecdote is not data, but I don't know if the professor was in Wisconsin. I guess it was in the 90s when the national budget was going to $1 trillion, and people were saying, hey, well, you know, what's going on? Where's our money going? But at that time, the people who had come into power were like, there are guys doing life in jail because their daughters dreamed of kangaroos.
I'm not sure where you're going, Mark. What you told our producer, I thought was interesting, that, you know, at the time of the Vietnam War, some people wanted to protest politely, and then others thought it didn't work. It came to violent protests. And there's always been this distinction, Steve, between angry, violent protest and politeness, seeing each other as too harsh or too naive on one side or the other. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think that is. I think it's a continuing issue that there's always the question about, you know, how much of a stand do you need to take? At what point do you need to go from, you know, letting people speak and showing respect there to standing up against things? And that's a very tough question. You know, I think Franklin faced that very issue when he is in France. He's one of the greatest diplomats we had. He helps bring France into the revolution. He keeps them on our side, allowing America to win the American Revolution. But John Adams, who was extremely brilliant man, later president of the United States, of course, he feels very upset. At Franklin, he says, you know, you aren't raising our issues. You aren't talking boldly enough. You aren't explaining clearly enough. And so he thinks that Franklin is being too nice about things. Now Franklin thinks, you know, no, I understand how these people operate, and it's better to act in this way.
As we wrap up, just in our last minute, Steve, you've been writing about the 18th century, but living in the 21st century. Are there lessons you think, thought-provoking ideas that we can take from the founding of the United States when it comes to politeness?
Boy, you know, when I started writing this, I had no idea that, you know, that this would be a time when people were so desperately concerned about this issue. And I do take some hope in what I see back in the 18th century, particularly the beginning of the 18th century, when things were so, when people were so angry, people were fighting with each other, angry all the time, and there are people, smart people, who said, you know, I don't you know, it's hard to imagine this is going to be resolved in decades, sort of thing. So, you know, so it's again, this does seem rather utopian, but in some ways, you know, it grew out of a time when people were just as worried about things as we are today, and in some cases, maybe more frustrated at things.
We'll leave it there for now. Steve, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's Stephen C. Bullock. He's a history professor at Worcester Polytechnic Institute in Massachusetts. He joined us today to talk about the role politeness played in the formation of American democracy. You can read a piece that he wrote for Aon Magazine. We've got a link to that over at the Central Time Facebook page.